Welcome to the Kaizen Creativity Podcast, where we apply the philosophy of continual improvement to our creativity. Each episode takes a scientific principle from creativity and innovation research, and we translate it into practical advice for your creativity. For more, you can visit us at jaredvoley.com. The history of civilization is the history of creativity. You cannot talk meaningfully about the past without bringing up the most important people and the most important inventions of our time. We are here today because of the creativity of the past. Creativity and culture are inseparable. And in no small way, creative people are responsible for the world around us. So from time to time in this podcast, I'm going to highlight different people, different inventions, and even some different time periods that are important to creativity. And while I don't intend to go through each era of creativity in chronological order, since this is the first episode where I'll be talking about a creative era, I thought it would be really cool to really start with the foundation of civilization. Now, we're not going to go all the way back to stone tools and cave paintings. Even though those things are really interesting in their own right, I don't really see them as being as consequential as the stuff I want to talk about today. Now, I'm not going to be turning these episodes into a history show. So if you really want that, you can go and find lots of great podcasts and YouTube videos that go over the history. And in fact, you'll be learning a lot about creativity in the process, because as I've been saying, creativity really formed the world we live in. So whenever you go back and you learn about the history of a people, you learn about the culture that creative people created, you learn about the weapons they used to defend themselves, and you learn about some of the social issues that they had to fight themselves. Now, I don't want to turn these episodes into a history show, so I'm going to be glossing over a lot of the dates and a lot of the details about what happened. What I want to do is keep our focus on the main events of the time period, what creativity really meant to the people that were living in that period, and how we can apply the lessons to our own creativity. Pre-civilized people had their own type of creativity. They discovered how to use items they found as tools, and then how to make their own tools. And with all the time savings, they even taught themselves how to draw an awesome stick figure of a buffalo. The rate of change during this era was incredibly slow. So much time was spent on survival that there was little time to devote to other activities. As we've talked about before, creativity is built by combining various ideas together to form something new. The more ideas you have to play around with, the more combinations you can make, and therefore the more creative you can be. And this is why expertise in an industry is so important to creativity. An expert has so many ideas in their head that they can use to build new ideas with. But a beginner simply doesn't have enough information to create these interesting combinations. So with so few ideas to build off of, creativity was really stagnant during this early pre-civilized era. So if creativity is built off of the past, then what do you do when there is no past for you to build off of? So you'd think that the creativity of pre-civilized humans would break this rule, but it actually doesn't. Pre-civilized humans built creative ideas off of the past just like we do today. They did it by using two creative tools that are still incredibly important to us today: observation and experimentation. Civilization was largely built on the back of four major innovations. The first one was the ability to grow food in abundance. And this meant that people no longer had to be hunter-gatherers. It satisfied that bottom layer of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which we talked about last month. Before this, there simply wasn't enough time available for the creative process to take place. The second major innovation was labor specialization. This meant that for the first time in human history, people could really focus their attention on specific areas that were unrelated to their next meal. With labor specialization, there was this new opportunity to work together. Suddenly, you had something that I couldn't make myself, and I had something that you wanted. We needed to work together in a way that humanity had never actually done before. This required a third major innovation: the organization of a society. With the increase in social interactions and specializations, it became increasingly important to find a way to track what was going on. And so we see writing systems begin to form at this time. Writing was the lubricant that made everything work together. It made everything easier for a group of people that were constantly confronted with new problems. These four innovations, the ability to grow food in abundance, labor specialization, the organization of society, and writing systems, they all had their own smaller innovations inside of them that I've completely left out here. We treat these innovations as if they were sparks of genius, but in reality, there were innumerable, tons of smaller ideas that came together slowly over time that allowed the major idea to occur. So we treat the innovation of food in abundance as being one single innovation, but in reality, it was many, many of them all tied together that we use an umbrella term for. So how did pre-civilized people create things using the past when there wasn't actually a past to draw from? The answer is that there was a past, it just took a different form than what we are used to seeing today. Let's take labor specialization as an example. Now keep in mind that this quote-unquote innovation occurred before Homo sapiens even existed. And we know this because archaeologists have found traces of labor specialization that are over 40,000 years old. Like so much of creativity during this period, it probably arose naturally. There was no goal in sight for dividing labor. People observed what was already happening, and then they magnified it. The division of labor likely arose out of the differences between different sexes and different age groups. So this means that older citizens, they were no longer effective at farming and hunting, and you just can't give your grandma a weapon and send her into the wild. She had to specialize in something else. Now this probably took the form of cooking and housekeeping, but it would have also involved things like sewing as well. Now if I had to take a guess, I would say that labor specialization came from a grandma. It makes sense for the needs of the time period, but also when you consider that grandmas are incredibly powerful figures. There's something about the DNA of a grandma that just gets it done. Now, grandpa probably retired, found a comfy chair, and then complained about not having anything to read because writing hadn't been invented yet. So yes, if you want someone to thank for labor specialization and for creating the foundations of society, it's probably grandma. This is what we've been talking about here. It is building off of the past to create something new. Pre-civilized humans, as well as other species, they already had labor specialization. It wasn't something that somebody had to think up to create. The differences between men and women, old and young, they were already there. So whether you found yourself with a prefrontal cortex or not didn't actually matter here. It's evolutionary. The creativity here was in recognizing that this specialization was already happening, and then magnifying it by doing it on purpose. The only thing that a pre-civilized person needed was the ability to observe what is happening already, and then to experiment with it. So some pre-civilized grandma wanted to find a way to contribute, and she became so good at sewing or cooking that her skills were requested by other people. And eventually, Grandma got back to work. And for the first time in human civilization, people would trade food for sewing expertise. All a person really needed to do to complete this innovation was to recognize what was already happening and magnify it. They said, if Grandma can trade her sewing skills for food, why can't we? And what is really cool about this is that none of it actually requires any advanced level of thinking. It was already there, we just hadn't noticed it yet. I think way too often we treat innovations as this stroke of brilliance, when more often than not, it was more about observing something that people just hadn't noticed before. And once you make that unique and interesting observation, or you notice that problem, the actions that you need to take to solve the problem are pretty straightforward. Now, I know it seems weird that I'm claiming that Grandma set up the foundations for society as we know it. But if we're talking purely about creativity, then I really think that this is true. Creativity takes a lot of free time, and that's something that would be incredibly rare during this time period. Now, there would have been a ton of smaller innovations coming from people that are engaged in the everyday work, right? But that's not what we're focused on here. Someone needed to do it, and that person needed to be influential. They needed to have an outside perspective that allowed them to see the entire problem all at once. And they had to have enough free time to think through all of the implications of a creative idea. It was Grandma. As you're creating today, get back to the basics. This process of observation and experimentation is just as relevant today as it was 40,000 years ago. Perhaps the solution to your problem is already in front of you. You just need to recognize that it's there and then to experiment with it. These two simple actions are all it takes to create something amazingly simple or incredibly complex. Observation and experimentation are so central to the foundations of creativity that you cannot separate them. Whether you know it or not, you are already engaged in this process of observation and experimentation. The question is, will you do it on purpose? If you're interested in hearing about the creativity of a specific era, then you can email me at podcast@jaredvoley.com and let me know. Hey everybody, during the month of April, the website podchaser.com is going to be donating 25 cents to Meals on Wheels for every podcast review that you leave on their site. They're also going to donate another 25 cents for every reply that I leave for your review. And of course, I'm going to take that feedback and find ways to improve the show. You can check it out using the link at the bottom of the show notes.